Welcome to Beat Infertility, a podcast where we get real about infertility, empower you to take back control, and provide you with hope for the future. Ready? Here's your host, fellow infertility warrior, Heather Hooman.
Welcome to episode 245. Today, you'll hear the success story of a woman named Annie. She is a 40-year-old ESL teacher who enjoys outdoor activities, shopping, and watching reality TV. Annie and her husband began trying to conceive 6 months after they got married. Because she was over 35, she was extremely proactive. While charting her cycles, she suspected she wasn't ovulating and went straight to her OBGYN. After discovering she had high prolactin, she was referred to a fertility clinic. Further testing revealed she had a prolactinoma, low AMH, and high FSH. She was told she wouldn't be a good candidate for IVF with her own eggs. However, after 2 weeks of grieving, she heard episode 123 and was inspired to go straight to an egg donor. Although it was the scariest thing she's ever done, they ended up with 3 embryos. Let's listen to how Annie's first transfer ended in a miscarriage, but the second resulted in her son. Hi, Annie. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Why don't we start by hearing a little bit about you? How old are you? What do you do for a living? And what do you do for fun?
I'm 40 years old, and I'm an elementary school ESL teacher. For fun, I like hanging out with my friends, going to the lake. I like going camping. And I like shopping and watching reality TV.
Think about your life before infertility. Back then, how would you describe yourself as a person?
I mean, I was pretty much the same. I wouldn't say infertility changed my personality or anything like that. I've always been adventurous. I've always been kind of a health nut, pretty easygoing.
Tell me about the first time you met your husband.
Girl, I met him online. I went online man shopping. That's what I like to call it. I went when I was 30 to Korea for a couple of years to teach. When I got back, I was ready for a relationship. So I went online. My brother had actually met his wife online. So I thought, well, maybe it'll work for me. And I met him pretty quickly within the first couple of months. On our first date, I met him at the pool at his apartment complex, which is kind of risky. I know you're supposed to meet at Starbucks or something, but I was like, well, it's broad daylight. I'll just go meet him there. And we went swimming and then we played Walmart bingo.
Today, how would you describe you and your husband as a couple?
See, that's a good question. I've really struggled with answering this one. We're both pretty laid back. We like to laugh at things, make fun of everything, and we work together. He's more serious, I would say. I'm kind of more outgoing and good with money, and I'm more of a spendthrift. So we kind of keep each other in check.
Was there a specific moment in your life when you first knew you wanted to be a mom?
No, not necessarily. I've always kind of wanted to be a mom. I started babysitting when I was 11. I babysat the whole time I was in high school and middle school. And I've just always really liked kids. And I kind of just always assumed I would be a mom. Then I got into my 20s and everything. And I was kind of crazy and just into partying and sort of finding myself, I guess you could say. Yeah, in my 30s, I was really ready. I was ready to be a mom by then.
How did longing to be a mom impact other decisions in your life?
Well, it didn't, did it? That's the problem. I think when I was in my 20s, I didn't think about that, or it was kind of on the back burner, and I was just sort of having a good time and in unhealthy relationships and just sort of parties and going to school and working little jobs, and it just sort of got away from me. It wasn't until I was probably looking for a good relationship and in my 30s where it was like, okay, I need to start finding someone with who has it all together and somebody I can see a future with as a parent.
Let's dive into the journey to build your family. Take us through your whole infertility timeline.
Okay. In June of 2017, I got married. Eddie and I had dated for about 4 years before we got married. He wanted to wait a year before trying to have children, but I was already 37. So I talked him down to 6 months, even though I really wanted to start trying right away. So in those 6 months, I learned about charting my cycle. I was really proactive about it because I was already old. So, and by old, I mean older to start trying to have children, obviously. I was really proactive about it, and I learned about charting my cycle. I read that book, what is it called? Taking Charge of Your Fertility, or Taking Control of Your Fertility. And I learned about charting, and I bought a basal body temperature thermometer. I read a bunch of books. I was like, I found some book called The Impatient Woman's Guide to Getting Pregnant Fast or something like that, and How to Have a Healthy Pregnancy After Age 30. I took all the supplements. I had already lost a bunch of weight before I got married, just with that as my motivation. I thought, you know what? I have prediabetes. I need to lose weight. I want to have a baby. That really motivated me in losing about 50 pounds. In October, I had my Paragard removed just like a few months earlier than we were going to start trying. And the whole reason I got the Paragard is that's the one without the hormones. And I, you know, when I got that early in my relationship with Eddie, I didn't want my periods to stop, and I didn't want to control them hormonally because I wanted to see that I was still having a regular period. And I thought that if I was having a regular period, that meant I was still fertile, and I was still having a regular period. So then, around October, I go to a chiropractor regularly once a month. And around that time, I told him I was going to try to have a baby. He was like, oh, that's great. You know, we'll be able to help you through your pregnancy. We can do adjustments. It's really good for you in pregnancy. And, oh, have you been tested for the MTHFR gene mutation? And I was like, what's that? And he told me about that. And so I made an appointment with their nurse practitioner to get my MTHFR gene mutation test. And it turned out I did have the heterozygous form of that. So she told me I would need to start taking different B vitamins, the kinds that are already converted. And I actually noticed a big difference when I took the new B vitamins. My eyelid stopped twitching as much, and I did feel like I had more energy. And also, that nurse practitioner did a full hormone and thyroid panel blood work on me, and she found that my estrogen was super duper low. My DHEA was super, super high. It was way higher than a woman's is supposed to be. My thyroid was a bit off. So she put me on thyroid. She's really into treating people's thyroid. So she put me on thyroid medication and said that, you know, your hormones are imbalanced, but hopefully the thyroid meds will kind of help balance them again. So she was like, you know, it's going to be really hard for you to get pregnant with your estrogen this low, but hopefully the thyroid meds will even it out a little better. So I started taking thyroid meds, and I was charting my cycle, and I noticed that I wasn't getting the cervical mucus that it says in that book, like the really fertile kind that's stretchy. I wasn't getting that anymore suddenly. It was like, where'd that all go? That December, we started to try. I was going to, you know, use my charting to be able to tell when to get pregnant more easily, but I didn't have any cervical mucus, and the temperatures were all over the place. Like, it's supposed to follow a certain pattern where it's lower before your temperature's lower before you ovulate, I think, and then it spikes around the time you ovulate, and then it kind of drops back down, but it stays higher because of the elevated progesterone, I think is my understanding. I'm trying to remember all this because I don't pay attention to it anymore. My temperature just went up, down, up, down, up, down. It did not follow the pattern at all. So I was like, I don't think I'm ovulating. And I, of course, tried the little ovulation test strips, and I never got a positive, ever. I went to my OBGYN and I told her that I had been charting my cycles and I don't think I'm ovulating, and this is why. And she immediately tested my prolactin levels, which is the hormone that makes breast milk, you know, that's something else I learned. They were high. It was like an 80, and it's not supposed to be that high if you haven't just had a baby. So she actually tried to milk me. She was like, do you have any milk discharge? And I was like, no. If I did, I would have been freaking out. And she squeezed my nipples trying to get milk out, and nothing came out. Luckily, because that would have freaked me out so much. But what she did was send me to an RE to further investigate this issue. There's a few REs in Knoxville, and I chose the female one because she was female and I like seeing female doctors. And I went to her. She said, you know, you can have a prolactinoma, which is a growth on your pituitary gland. And so she sent me to get an MRI of my brain. I was like, okay, whoa. I didn't know this was going to lead to this, you know? So I went and I had an MRI of my brain. And I, you know, I remember I was just getting over the flu and I'd had a cough really bad. And then you go in to get an MRI and they put your head in a cage and they're like, don't move. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just hope I don't cough, you know? And I didn't, I did a really good job. By the way, if you ever go get an MRI of your brain, just close your eyes and pretend like you're not in that tube and everything will be fine. After that, they discovered a 5 millimeter growth on my pituitary gland that was releasing prolactin. So I did have a prolactinoma, and I went back to the RE for the results, and she explained this to me, and she said, you know, if this is your only problem, then it's not a problem. We can treat this and you'll start ovulating again. But I have a feeling this isn't your only problem. And she explained to me, she suspected that I probably had low egg quality. And I mean, she started spouting off all this information that I wasn't ready for yet. I didn't know that it applied to me. Somehow she just intuitively knew, I don't know, that this would apply to me. And so she spouted off all this information about low AMH and high FSH. And if your AMH is low, then that means, you know, your egg quality, or you're low on eggs and the egg quality is low if your FSH is high. And she just went on and on. And I was just like trying to absorb it all, but I didn't know that it applied to me yet. So I kind of dismissed it in my mind, like, we'll worry about this later if this is the problem, but we don't know if this is the problem yet. It was kind of like that. So she went ahead, and I was on day, somehow I was on day three of my cycle, and she did the day three FSH test and AMH test. And she explained what all of that meant. I was actually at work teaching when the nurse at her clinic called me. For some reason, I was dumb enough to answer the phone. Like, my students were doing independent work and they called, and I was really anxious for the results. So I picked up the phone, and the nurse, she really stumbled over the words, which she gave me the sense that she didn't really know what she was talking about. Like, she was new and she didn't know what all the acronyms were, the letters and the, she was like, you're here. Oh, you have some results back. Oh, let me look at them. Let's see, your AMH is 0.046 and your FSH is 16. And she was like, well, okay, have a nice day, bye. And so basically she just told me that I can't have children. And I was like in the middle of my class, my second graders. And I was just like, I had to just kind of fake it for the rest of my class and not cry, because that was such devastating news. And at the same time, I wasn't sure if that's what it meant, because she had explained it all. Like I said, she had explained it all to me too soon, and I didn't know that it was pertaining to me. So like all this information she gave me, I didn't 100% pay attention to. After that, I was just like really sad for like 2 weeks. I probably cried for 2 weeks. And during that 2 weeks, a friend of mine, I went to a party with some friends who had gotten married about the same time as us. And she was like, guess what? I'm pregnant. And they had just been like casually trying. And she said, we're pregnant. Yeah, I quit smoking just as soon as I found out. And, oh my God, I cried for like 2 days after that, I was like, it's not fair. It's not fair. You know what I mean? Like, and that's when I think that's when I realized how bad I really wanted a baby, because before that I'd had conversations with friends that was like, yeah, you know, I know I'm kind of older, but you know, if it doesn't work out, I'll just adopt. And maybe I'll wait till I'm 45 and adopt an older child and this and that. And then it's funny that even after all that stuff I tried, I mean, I did all this stuff. I took all the supplements. I changed my diet. I did all this stuff to try to get pregnant fast, only to find out that my eggs were garbage. You know what I mean? And then my friend's just like, yeah, I quit smoking as soon as I found out I was pregnant. And I mean, I'm happy for her, of course, but at the time I was not happy for her. I was just devastated for myself. And I was screaming like life isn't fair. And I was just crying, and I would never hold that against her. It's not her fault. And it's just the cards that were dealt. So I cried for like 2 days. That was it. I mean, I stayed depressed, you know, about the not being able to have children with my own eggs for 2 weeks. But then I learned more about egg donor IVF, and I kind of considered, you know, before that I hadn't even considered IVF, period. I had said to myself, I'm not going to pay $12,000 to have a baby. But then it's like, once they said I couldn't have a baby naturally, that's when I realized how bad I wanted one. So I kind of looked into egg donor IVF, and I let myself get excited about it. I listened to your podcast, specifically, I think it was Sarah's story, I believe her name was, where she had a similar diagnosis as me, but she was in denial for a long time that she couldn't get pregnant. And she wasted a lot of time and money on IUIs until she finally went to Mexico and got an egg donor, and it worked first try. And I listened to that and I was like, I don't want to put myself through all that. I don't want to try 4 cycles of IVF with my own eggs and have it not work and waste all that time and all that money and all those emotions. I was like, I just don't want to put myself on that roller coaster. I want to do what's going to work. All I care about is having a baby. So it doesn't really matter if it's genetically related to me. And I thought about all of my genes that I have that are really bad. And I was like, why would I want to pass that on to someone? That's kind of where I made my decision to get an egg donor. And so I kind of like dove into that wholeheartedly. I looked at online national egg donor databases, and I was like, I had so much fun. It was like when I was online dating, how you can look through all the profiles of men and be like, I like this one. No, I don't like this one. I don't like that one. You know, it was like that, except I was looking at women to be my egg donor. And it was fun. I was like, ooh, my husband has red hair. I could pick a redheaded egg donor, and then my babies will have red hair. And I would love that, because I always wanted red hair myself, but I didn't have it. So I got excited about it. And I went out to Arizona. My parents live there, and they were celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. So that summer, I told them, I was like, this is my diagnosis, and I'm going to get an egg donor. That's the plan. I'm going to go meet with this new reproductive endocrinologist when I get home, and that's what I want to do. And I just let myself get excited about it. It was like a year later after we'd gotten married by now. I made an appointment with a new reproductive endocrinologist. I decided to change. Well, my husband decided I needed to change, and he was right, because the original one that I saw kind of rushed me through my subsequent appointments. And he went to one of those appointments with me. I was like, I really need you there. I need you to listen to this woman and like absorb this information, because I'm so emotional about it. I can't really understand what she's even saying to me. So he came, and we brought up all the stuff like, could we do acupuncture to help the egg quality? Could we do this? Could we do that? And she was just kind of like, no, 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 there's nothing will work. And this woman, you could tell she was really brilliant. Like, she's a very smart person, but that's part of the problem. She's too smart for me. I'm like, I don't understand what you're talking about. But she kind of rushed us through that appointment, and he was like, you're not going back to her. You need a new doctor. I was just like, oh, it's such a pain to change a doctor, but it's really not that big of a deal to change your doctor. And I just had to call her clinic and have them fax all the information that they had learned about me over to the new one. And it was really that easy. I think it was like June, the end of June of 2018, I went to the new RE, and my first appointment with him had to be down in Chattanooga because he has two clinics, one in Knoxville and one in Chattanooga. And it was faster to get in for my first appointment down to Chattanooga. So I went down there and met with him. And it was funny because I had already made the decision to get an egg donor at that point. And he wasn't used to that. I think it takes women a lot longer usually to make that decision, or he's used to having to kind of slowly introduce that concept to a woman so she doesn't just immediately reject it. But he didn't bring it up. And I told him I was like, yeah, my AMH is 0.046. And he made that face, like that cringing face, like, oh, that's not very good. You know, he was like, well, we could try this Clomid challenge and this and that. And I was like, that sounds like a waste of time. Is that going to be a waste of time? And he was like, probably. And I was like, I just want to do what's going to work. What's going to work? I want an egg donor. And he was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not used to women telling me they want an egg donor. Okay. So let's talk about that then. So we talked about that. By the way, I guess I forgot to mention that the first RE tried Clomid with me. Before we had my AMH results, that same day that I got the blood test done, she said, we can go ahead and try Clomid this cycle. She said, it's either not going to work or it will work. But if it doesn't work, it's because your AMH is too low and it's just not going to work, but it won't hurt you. So I said, okay, well, let's go ahead and try it. So we tried it. And because I was also taking medicine to treat my prolactinoma, that in and of itself made me ovulate. So I did ovulate one egg, but Clomid, I think, is supposed to make you ovulate several. So it really didn't work on me. So when the new doctor said, let's try this Clomid challenge, which I know is a little bit different. It's like some protocol that I didn't really look too far into, but I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm over it. Let's move on. We got set to, he told me all about it. He got me excited about it. He said, yeah, so if you're ready to get an egg donor and if you could pick an egg donor quickly, then I could have you pregnant within 3 weeks. And I mean, when I heard him say that, I just got so excited. I was like, wow, that's what I want. I want to be pregnant like right now, like yesterday. So then, you know, he sends you to talk with the financial lady, and she brings out a sheet of paper with the cost. And now I already had an idea of what the cost was going to be. And in fact, when she showed me the number, I thought it was going to be higher than that. Now he has his own, my RE has his own egg bank, and he has his own, I think he has his own sperm bank. I don't know. I didn't have to use somebody else's sperm. But he has his own egg donor bank. So that, I think, made it a lot less expensive, because I asked him too. I was like, so do I have to use one of your egg donors, or can I pick one from a national bank? And he was like, no, you absolutely can pick one from a national bank. It's just going to add to the cost. And I definitely didn't want to add to the cost. We're not rich. And I was already scared about gambling $18,000, which is how much they charge for egg donor IVF at my clinic. So he basically said, you get 6 eggs out of the freezer that we have in the bank, and we'll fertilize all of them with your husband's sperm, assuming that the sperm was going to be good, because they hadn't tested that yet. He said, you can expect to get 1 embryo from that. Well, we're going to try all 6, but usually we get 1. He sent me to the financial lady after that, and she talked to me and she showed me the number, and I was just like, okay. And I had no idea how I was going to come up with that money. And I went home, and my husband actually didn't come with me to this. He was working. So I brought a good friend of mine with me instead. So when I went home and brought it up to my husband, I burst into tears. And he was like, why are you crying? And I was like, because it's $18,000. And my husband is very frugal with money. And I didn't know how badly he wanted children. He definitely didn't want them as badly as me. He was even okay with not having them, but I was not okay with that. I really wanted children. I thought it was kind of going to be game over, because if I couldn't get him to agree to it, then how could I do this? And to my surprise, he was willing to go there. So we kind of planned. I was thinking about work, and I really wanted it to be when I was on a vacation so I wouldn't be stressed out, because work can be kind of stressful. And so I think we tried to do it that October, or we were going to do it during summer, actually. I wanted to do it during summer vacation. But what happened was my husband got laid off from his job right as soon as I was about to take a loan out in his name, because I swear it's sexist when you try to take out a loan. My husband and I have equal credit. Our credit scores are both pretty high. And when I tried to get a loan, all I could get was either a 27% interest rate, which is crazy. One bank said that they could give me the worth of my car, which at the time was like $6,000. And I'm like, $6,000 isn't enough. But for some reason, I could get a loan in his name for 12% interest rate for the full $18,500. So we were about to take out that loan when he got laid off, and that shut it down. I didn't take the loan out. That was pretty devastating too, because I'm like, man, I want to get on with this. We had to wait. But what happened was he got a severance when he got laid off, because they laid off a bunch of people. They gave him 6 months worth of COBRA in cash, like the money to pay for COBRA. And then what happened was, and they gave him an extra month salary, I think, plus $1,000 on top of that. I can't remember, as a severance. It was a decent severance package, it seemed like to me. That August, also, my school system decided to change the pay schedule for teachers, because it was starting in September, but we start work in August. So what was happening to new teachers was they were not getting the first paycheck, because the pay schedule didn't start until the next month. So they were like starving to death for a month. So they decided to push it back so that the teachers would get the paycheck on the first day. So any of us are on the first pay, what's it called, rotation. So that month, any of us who had already been there for a few years got an extra paycheck. So I got an extra paycheck. He got all this money in severance and COBRA, and then he got a new job quickly. So we didn't need that COBRA. He had like $6,000 extra dollars from the COBRA payments. And I had an extra couple thousand from my extra paycheck. Anyways, we ended up putting it together. We had $10,000 to give to the fertility clinic. Then the rest of the money, we just opened a credit card that was like no interest for 18 months type deal. And we put the rest of the $8,000 on the credit card and just paid it off before our interest built up. So it ended up being better than that loan I was going to take out. I had my first transfer in December, which was Christmas break. I had it all planned out. Like, okay, I'm going to get a massage. I'm going to get I was already getting acupuncture. That was one of my things I was doing. I had it all planned out, so I would just be like stress-free, and then the 9-day wait would be over Christmas, so I would have activities every day because we got together with family and did all the Christmas things to kind of distract me, because I knew that I would go crazy like everybody does during that little 2-week wait period, with my clinic, it's 9 days. I had my first transfer December. When we got the call, they said I was pregnant, and oh my gosh, I was just crying with joy. I was so happy that it actually worked, because this was seriously like the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. And I've done some scary things. I went back for my second blood draw, and the number didn't, like the, what is it, HCG? It didn't increase. So they said, it looks like it's a chemical pregnancy. So I was like so devastated. But, oh, I forgot to tell this detail. I didn't just get one embryo. I somehow got three, which he said only 10% of the people who do this type of egg donor cycle with him get 3 embryos. Usually you get 1, some people get 2, and I got 3 somehow. That was really stressful too, waiting to find out how many embryos you're going to get. Cause it's like, what if you get 0, you know? I was devastated when I found out that that pregnancy wasn't going to work out. But then in February, we were able to start another FET cycle and we used the second embryo, and that's my baby.
Hey, infertility warrior, it's Heather. This episode of Beat Infertility is brought to you by me. In addition to hosting this podcast, I'm an infertility coach who supports warriors just like you. Regular listeners know that I struggled during my journey to make good decisions and advocate for myself. As a result, it took 5 years, $75,000, 3 egg retrievals, 7 embryo transfers, 4 miscarriages, and 2 stillbirths before I finally had my daughter. In other words, I've been where you are. Now that I'm on the other side, I help people like you navigate the complicated world of fertility treatments and other paths to parenthood. I help people like you make scientifically based, well-informed decisions about your next steps rather than relying on Dr. Google and Facebook groups. I help people like you prepare for appointments, identify opportunities to ask questions, and advocate for yourself. I help people like you become an active member of your fertility treatment team rather than blindly trusting the decisions that are made for you. I help people like you become a parent faster. I only have a couple of slots open and they generally fill up fast. So if this is the help you need, reach out today. Tell me your story and learn more about how I can support you during your infertility journey at beatinfertility.co/hope. Now, back to the show. Going back to the beginning part of your story, why did you decide to start with your OB rather than going straight to a fertility clinic?
I wasn't ready to do IVF. And I kind of thought going to an RE, they would push IVF on me. And I still had it in my mind that I was going to get pregnant naturally through all the, you know, health nut things I was doing. So I just went to my OB because I was already established with her. It was easier. And I wasn't ready to jump into the whole fertility treatment thing yet.
Once you did move on to the RE, and I know that you went to a couple, what was your initial impression and how did that change over time?
The initial RE, my impression of her was, like I said, I think she's really brilliant, but her clinic was kind of old. It was kind of dark, it was small. I think it was just her and one nurse and one secretary. That's kind of what I remember it being. Her nurse didn't really make me feel super confident. She was real country. I don't want to sound prejudiced or anything, but down here, people say y'all. And then if you're real country, you say yuns. Have you ever heard that before?
I have not.
I hadn't either. And I've lived in the South for a long time. Now, my family is not Southern. They're from Arizona. So I guess they're Southwestern. But I grew up mostly in Tennessee, but I didn't hear anyone say yuns until I was out of college and working at Toys R Us in Knoxville. Like, yuns got any Barbies in stock? Like, that's how they say it. I was like, wow, I've heard it. And I love accents. I love every accent, it seems like. But I don't know if I want my RE nurse to talk like that. Like I said, she stumbled over the letters and didn't really sound like she asked when I came in there, like, yin's trying to get pregnant, like that. And I'm like, well, why else would I be here? I don't know. I guess there's other reasons people go to REs, but I didn't have the best impression of that clinic. And like I said, my last appointment with her, I wanted to talk more about egg donor, IVF, and this and that. And she brushed me off. She was like, oh, that's for another visit. And she was almost physically pushing me out of the office. That's what it felt like. Eddie didn't like that at all. I didn't like it either, but I was more hesitant to just change doctors. Because I was really emotional at the time, and it was just, everything was hard and everything was scary. And he was like, no, you're not going to this doctor. So I had a friend who had done IVF the year before all of this, and she had a son, and she used this other doctor that I ended up transferring to. And so, you know, I knew that he worked because my friend had a baby because of him. So I went to the other doctor.
Why did you decide to be so open about your journey?
In my past, holding things in and having secrets has been very toxic. I'm kind of open anyways. That's my personality. I'm kind of an open book, and I like to talk to people, and I'm not a judgmental person for the most part. I'm not saying I'm like a perfect little angel. That's certainly not true. I don't feel judged by people because I don't really judge people. I guess there's a stigma when it comes to infertility, but I didn't sense that and I didn't really care, I guess. I didn't feel any sort of like shame or less of a person because I had infertility at 37, 38. It was cool. I thought the IVF process was really cool. I was like, man, I would want to hear about this. This is interesting. The embryologist looks under a microscope and bonks a sperm on the base of the tail to stun it. And then she sucks it up into an injection needle and then injects it into an egg. Like, how cool is that? I would want to know about all this stuff. So that's why I decided to be open. I was just like, I'm going to tell everyone. Also, I'm a teacher. In my building, I work with mostly women. And if you tell one person something, then pretty much everybody's going to know about it. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to tell everybody.
What was it like teaching young kids while going through your journey?
I've always taught. I mean, I've been a teacher for a while. So that was okay. I'm really an educator at heart. I mean, that's the other reason I was really open too, is because I learned so much about fertility and I learned so much about my body, and I wanted other people to be educated about this too. And with the kids, it was like, I wanted to tell them everything, but you have to be careful because they're not your kids. You know what I mean? And, you know, in this country, we have such a stigma when it comes to sex and reproduction. You know, we can't teach our girls anything except to keep a nickel between your knees, which is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know. So I had to kind of keep what I told them to a minimum. You know, I wanted to tell them like, yeah, the doctor helped me have a baby and blah, 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 you know, but I didn't tell them too much. I had to kind of fake being happy too, because after that miscarriage, I was back at work. I'm normally a very happy, bubbly person. I'm always smiling. I think I get on people's nerves because it's like 7 a.m. and I'm like, good morning. And they're like, my coffee's not kicked in yet, you know? So for me to walk around sullen, people take notice. They're like, whoa, what is wrong with her? So I kind of, for the kids, really tried to put on a smile during that time.
You talked about this a little bit, but I'm going to ask the question in case you want to add anything. How did you get over the grief of the loss of your genetics so quickly?
I think that has to do with me being a teacher. I've had so many kids and I love them. I teach English as a second language. A lot of my students are Hispanic. In my specific neighborhood, a lot of them are Guatemalan. They're very genetically different than me, and I love them to death. And I could imagine going to Guatemala and taking home a baby and just loving it to death. Because I could imagine even like adopting a child of a different race or something, the genetics, it was easy for me to get over that. And also, I have some bad genes in my family. A funny detail is that when I was 21, I tried to donate my own eggs in college. This is back in 2001, before the internet had a huge presence. So I think I might have even seen an ad in an actual newspaper, which makes me laugh now, to donate eggs. And you could get, I think they were offering $3,000 or $1,000. It was something like that. It wasn't a ton of money, but I was like, ooh, I could pay my credit card bill with that. I got a form in the mail. I remember I had to fill out these like 20 pages of forms to try to donate my eggs. I was literally only going to do it for the money. I didn't at the time. I was too young and self-centered to be thinking, oh, I'll be helping another woman, which that didn't not appeal to me. It's just not what I was thinking. I was like, I'm just going to donate my eggs and get $1,000 and pay off my credit card bill. And so I filled out these forms and I was very honest on the forms. I filled out all my family history. Yeah, my mom's mom was an alcoholic and she had severe depression. Her dad died of cancer, colon cancer, and he had also been an alcoholic, but he was recovered. I've got diabetes in my family. I've got this and that. And I filled it all out very honestly and I got rejected. I thought about that. I was like, okay, my eggs aren't good enough for other people. Why would I want to use these eggs? That was one of the things I thought of. I didn't want to pass on these genes to my children. I personally have an addictive personality. I've struggled with depression in the past. I have pre-diabetes. Even though I lost all that weight, I still couldn't get off medication for that. And it's on both sides of my family. Diabetes is. So I thought, you know, I have a lot of genes that I don't want to pass on. I just kind of tried to look on the bright side.
At what point in your pregnancy did you shift your thoughts from infertility warrior to I'm about to be a mother?
You know what? It took a long time, actually. It was funny because I think even at like 20 weeks pregnant, I was still listening to your show and still had that mindset. And it was probably about, you know, well into my second trimester where I was like, you know, I should probably start thinking about raising a child at this point. I don't need to listen to all this infertility information anymore. Like, I should start listening to some parenting podcasts or something. So I started doing that. Once I realized I was going to be a mother was it wasn't right when I got the positive pregnancy test at all. You're still very cautiously wary, like I could lose this embryo. And then, yeah, even in second trimester, it was still very abstract. And I started preparing to have a child, but it hadn't really clicked yet that I was going to be a mother. And I actually had an experience when I was probably 36 weeks pregnant. So my husband and I like to go for walks in our little subdivision. We walk the subdivision every day. There was another couple walking who also lives in the same neighborhood. And she was also pregnant and she looked, you know, probably a couple months ahead of me. So she was further along than me. And I would see her when we would go walking and be like, oh, she's going to have a baby too. You know, but I never talked to her because I didn't know her. And I make it a point not to just assume someone's pregnant, even though in her case, it was pretty obvious, but I'm not just going to go up and ask somebody like, oh, what do you do? Because what if she's not pregnant? You know what I mean? Like, even though, anyways, one day I was driving out of the neighborhood. I saw her pushing a stroller and I was probably about 36 weeks along. And when I saw her pushing the stroller, I just gasped. I was like, oh my God, I'm about to have a baby. Like, that's when it hit me.
Do you have any financial tips for listeners since you guys went through so much to finance your cycles?
That's hard to say because, like I said, we kind of had this fortunate time where he got a severance and then got a job quickly. So we didn't have to spend all of that waiting for him to get a job. And I got that extra paycheck. So that was all kind of lucky. And the rest we put on a credit card because we both have good credit. If you have good credit, that's a good thing. Definitely look into getting a credit card with no interest. They make a lot of them no interest for 12 months. I think I found one that was no interest for 18 months. But we didn't even need that long. We had it paid off before my son was born. Finding a loan was not easy. Like I said, I think it's sexist. I think if you can look in your husband's name, you might get a better offer. At least that's how it was for us. With my husband and I having both very similar credit, he could find a loan for 12% interest and I could only find one for 27% interest, which is absolutely ridiculous.
How did infertility change your relationship with your husband?
It helps me realize like how down he was for me. It helps me realize how much he really wanted a baby because, you know, before he was like, yeah, I'm open to having children. Like that was his answer to the question, do you want children, when we were dating? Like, I'm open to it, which for me was enough at the time. I was like, okay, that's good enough. It wasn't like, yes, I have to have children. We've got to have them. It wasn't like that. It was just like, yeah, I'm open to it. But once we started going through this, he was really supportive. He was even willing to help fork out all that money, which shocked me because this man won't even let me buy peanut butter unless it's on sale. Okay. There was also the option, which I think is a really cool option for people who don't want to spend as much money as we did, and that's embryo adoption. Asked my doctor how much embryo adoption was, and he said $5,000, which is way cheaper. The caveat was that the embryo adoption was a 1 to 2 year waiting list, and I wasn't willing to wait. But I did bring that up to my husband. I was like, is it worth it? We could do embryo adoption and spend a lot less money. What do you think about that? And I honestly thought he would jump at it. Like, yes, let's do that because it was so much cheaper. And to my surprise, he really paused and was like, I don't know. I'd really like the child to be at least genetically related to me. And I said, well, I would too. But is it worth $12,000? Basically, like, it's weird to put a money amount on all of this, isn't it? To my surprise, he did want to spend the extra money to do the egg donor route so we could use his sperm. And going through the whole thing, the whole pregnancy, the whole IVF cycle, you know, he gave me the shots. He put up with me on hormones, which I'm usually pretty even keeled. I don't get in a bad mood very often. I definitely had some psychotic, like extreme emotional episodes when I was on the hormones. It wasn't that crazy. Like, I could live my life normal. Like, I don't want anybody to get scared. But for example, one night I went upstairs with a full glass of water. And I'm pretty klutzy, and I knocked the water glass onto the floor, and the glass shattered, and the water spilled everywhere. And instead of cussing up a storm like a normal person would do, I cried so hard. I started bawling, and I could not handle it. And I just threw myself on my bed, scream crying. And my husband was like, what is wrong? And I was like, I can't clean it. I broke the glass. And like, he swept it up and he mopped up the water. And I couldn't handle it. I was just crying on the bed. So I found out how much my husband could be there for me.
How has infertility changed you?
You know, I think I'm just like, I'm the same, but I'm more pissed off now at how little women are educated about their bodies and about their cycles. I definitely feel more strongly about that because I learned more trying to get pregnant about my body than I ever knew before. And as an educator, I feel like we should offer more classes to women, young women, girls about not just how to prevent pregnancy, which they don't even really teach you that very well, but just not just about your period, but about your hormones and keeping your hormones balanced, protecting your fertility, all this stuff to expect, like how to care for yourself during pregnancy. We should be teaching girls more.
Knowing what you know now, what is one piece of advice that you give to your past self?
I'd say, guess what? You do get a baby after all this. Wouldn't that be nice to just know the outcome in the thick of all of it? I would tell myself that physically it's not as bad as you think it's going to be. I was really scared of the injections And that wasn't that bad. I mean, I've heard some women say it's painful, but for me, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I just iced it. And then my husband gave me the shot. Then I'd put a heating pad over it, and it barely hurt at all. In fact, the first time he gave me a shot, I was terrified and I didn't even realize he had given it to me. I was like, what? You're done? That was it? I didn't even feel it. It was that crazy. And I guess the other thing that really frightened me in the middle of it was the money thing. I was terrified of gambling $20,000. I've been to slot machines before and I'm like, okay, here's my $20. This is how much I'm willing to just waste. And then that'll be it, you know? And I'll hit like once, I've only done this like maybe once or twice, but once I hit like, and I won $20 back after I put a couple dollars in and I took it and I cashed it out. I was like, that's it. I'm ahead. I'm cashing out and I'm pocketing the money. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not much of a gambler. And it wasn't even just the gambling of the money that was scary. It was the thought that I wouldn't end up with my baby in the end. And I would just still have this like monthly bill to pay every month to remind me that I didn't get what I wanted. So I would just tell myself, physically, it's not that bad. And money is just money. It comes and goes. And it doesn't mean anything.
What words of hope would you offer to someone who's just starting their infertility journey right now?
I like the words of hope that other women on your podcast have said, that if you really want to be a mother, you will be. You'll find a way. But what I really needed at the beginning of all this was a pep talk. So that's what I want to give a woman right now, if that's okay. I'd like to just give a pep talk that I would have liked to heard myself. And that would be like, girl, you can do this. It's totally worth it. Even if it doesn't work, at least you tried. You're not promised tomorrow. Some people die young. And you've got to go for it because it's what you want. And it's scary, but you'll gain a lot more going through that than you would have otherwise. So you just got to do it.
Annie, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm glad we got to do this.
Thank you for listening to Beat Infertility. Join our free private support community at beatinfertility.co/app. If you find yourself needing additional support, visit our paid programs at beatinfertility.co/hopeyou. If you'd like your story to be considered for a future episode, please fill out the form at beatinfertility.co/contact. Until next time.